Chapter 63. In a hired carriage, Sean arrived punctually at the Goldberg residence. He arrived like a column of wise men from the east. The seats of the carriage were piled with fancy-wrapped packages. However, Sean's limited knowledge of a three-year-old female's tastes were reflected in his choice of gifts. Every single package contained a doll. There were large china dolls that closed their eyes when reclining, small rag dolls with blonde plaits, a doll that passed water, a doll that squawked when its stomach was squeezed, dolls in a dozen national costumes, and dolls in swaddling clothes. Bijani followed the carriage, leading the gift, which Sean considered a masterstroke of originality. It was a piebald Shetland pony, complete with a hand-fashioned English saddle and a tiny martingale and reins. The gravel drive was crowded with carriages. Sean was forced to walk the last 100 yards, his arms filled with presents. Under these circumstances, navigation was a little difficult. He took a fix on the hideously ornamented roof of the mansion, which he could just see over the top of his load, and set off blind across the lawns. He was aware of the continuous and piercing shrieking which grew louder as he proceeded, and finally of an insistent tugging on his right trouser leg. He stopped.
"Are those my presents?"
a voice from somewhere above the level of his knee asked. He craned his head out to one side and looked down into the upturned face of a miniature Madonna. Large shining eyes in an oval of innocent purity, framed with shiny dark curls. Sean's heart flipped over. "That depends what your name is," he hedged.
"My name is Miss Storm Friedman of the Golds, Chase Valley, Pietermaritzburg. Now are they my presents?"
Sean bent his knees until he squatted with his face almost on a level with that of the Madonna. "Many happy returns of the day, Miss Friedman," he said.
"Oh, goody!"
She fell on the packages, trembling with excitement, while from the mass of 50 children who ringed them in, the shrieking continued unabated. Storm demolished the wrappings in very short order, using her teeth when her fingers were inadequate for the task. One of her small guests attempted to assist her, but she flew at him like a panther kitten with a cry of,
"They're my presents!"
He retired hastily. At last she sat in a litter of wrappings and dolls and pointed at the single remaining package in Sean's hands.
"That one?"
she asked. Sean shook his head. "No, that one is for your mummy. But if you look behind you, you might find something else." Bijani, grinning widely, was holding the Shetland. For seconds, Storm was too overcome to speak. And then with a sound like a steam whistle, she flew to her feet. Deserting her newly adopted children, she ran to the pony. Behind her, a flock of small girls descended on the dolls, vultures when a lion leaves the kill.
"Lift me, lift me!"
Storm was hopping with delirious impatience. Sean took her up, and the warm, wriggling little body in his hands made his heart flip again. Gently he set her on the saddle, handed her the reins, and led the pony towards the house. A queen riding in state, followed by an army of her attendants, Storm reached the upper terrace. Ruth was standing beside the delicacy-laden trestle table with the parents of Storm's guest. Sean handed the lead rein to Mbijani, "Look after her well." And he crossed the terrace, very conscious of the many adult eyes upon him, thankful for the hour he had spent that morning in the barber's shop and for the care he had taken with his attire. A brand new suit of expensive English broadcloth, boots burnished to a gloss, solid gold watch chain across his belly, and a white carnation in his buttonhole. He stopped in front of Ruth and removed his hat. She held out her hand, palm downwards. Sean knew that he was not expected to shake that hand.
"Sean, how good of you to come."
Sean took her hand. It was a measure of his feelings that he bowed to touch it with his lips, a gesture which he considered French, foppish, and undignified.
"It was good of you to ask me, Ruth."
He produced the box from under his arm and held it out to her. She opened it without a word, and her cheeks flushed with pleasure when she saw the long-stemmed roses it contained.
"Oh, how sweet of you!"
And Sean's heart did its trick again, as she smiled full into his eyes, then slipped her hand into the crook of his arms. "I'd like you to meet some friends of mine." That evening, when the other guests had left, and Storm, prostrated with nervous and physical exhaustion, had been put to bed, Sean stayed on to dinner with the Goldbergs. By now, both Ma and Pa Goldberg were fully aware that Sean's interest in Ruth was not on account of his previous friendship with Saul. All afternoon, Sean had followed Ruth around the lawns like a huge St. Bernard, behind a dainty poodle. During dinner, Sean, who was extremely pleased with himself, Ruth, the Goldbergs, and life in general, was able to endear himself to Ma Goldberg and also dull Ben Goldberg's suspicions that he was a penniless adventurer. Over brandy and cigars, Sean and Ben discussed the ventures on Lioncop and Mahubas Kloof. Sean was completely frank about the financial tightrope which he was walking, and Ben was impressed with the magnitude of the gamble and Sean's cold appraisal of the odds. It was just such a coup as this that had put Ben Goldberg where he was today. It made him feel nostalgic and vaguely sentimental of the old days, so that when they went through to join the ladies, he patted Sean's arm and called him my boy. On the front steps, while he was preparing to leave, Sean asked, "May I call on you again, Ruth?" And she answered, "I'd like that very much." Now began what for Sean was a novel form of courtship. To his surprise, he found he rather enjoyed it. Every Friday night he would entrain for Pietermaritzburg and install himself in the White Horse Hotel. From this base he conducted his campaign. There were dinner parties, either at the Golds or with Ruth's friends, or at one of the local hostelries where Sean played host. There were balls and dances, days at the races, picnics and rides over the surrounding hills, with Storm on her Shetland bouncing along between them. During Sean's absences from Ladyburg, Dirk moved into the cottage on Protea Street, and Sean was relieved that he seemed to accept it with much better grace. The time arrived when at last the first blocks of wattle were ready for the axe. Sean determined to use this as an excuse to inveigle Ruth away to Ladyburg. The Goldbergs froze up solid at the suggestion, and only thawed when Sean produced a written invitation from Ada for Ruth to be her guest for the week. Sean went on to explain that it was to be a celebration of his first cutting of bark, which would begin at the end of the week, and that thereafter he would not leave Ladyburg for months. Ma Goldberg, who was secretly delighted at having Storm all to herself for a whole week, exerted a subtle influence on Ben, and very grudgingly he gave his approval. Sean decided that Ruth would be treated like visiting royalty. The grand climax to his suit.